Good morning. Well, it's Fair Week, and the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow in work session starting at 4:15 at the County Courthouse in Colville. They'll begin the meeting, meeting Miss Summit County, as well as the rodeo royalties, among other business. In the studio, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So Chris Robinson will be presenting the draft for a new interlocal agreement under the new structure of the Mountain Accord. So reviewing this, we have a central Wasatch Commission now instead of the executive board?
That is correct, and that is made up of several members on the I-15 corridor that will make up that commission, and they will likely invite a Summit County representative to join that commission after the commission is formed.
All right, so just one representative from the entire Wasatch back rather than two.
That is correct. They're trying to make the group a little bit smaller, a little bit easier to draw them together on a regular basis in order to do their work. The last group was a little large.
So is staff still recommending that Park City Council member Andy Bierman be that?
I believe so. So it's really up to the county council and the city council to recommend. And the last conversation that the county council had about that, they were positive on recommending Andy to be that representative.
So do you think that this reduces the role of the Wasatch Back?
I don't think so. I think it certainly makes it proportional to the other members that are there. I think where we have seen the biggest amount of influence is a lot on that transportation side. One of the positive things that have come out of the Mountain Accord in the last year is that we do have SR-248 I-80 study that's alternatives analysis that's already ongoing. The money to pay for that coming from Mountain Accord is already in the county's coffers in order to pay for that. So we're already seeing some benefit from the Mountain Accord relationship in order to advance things in the future for our road system.
Now, I believe the current interlocal agreement runs to 2017, and under it, Summit County pays $50,000 a year. Park City pays $100,000 a year. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that will continue. The interlocal agreement contemplates continuing that obligation through the same term that was in the original agreement. So we will just continue to make our payments on an annual basis.
So this new agreement just runs then through 2017?
So we'll end up making three payments. So we made our first one this year, one in 17, one in 18. So that commitment, that financial commitment will run through 2018.
Great. Okay. And again, that amount stays the same.
That's correct. And then there's another item that's being contemplated by the commission once it's formed, which is moving the financial backing and the governance local government part to this commission, as opposed to being governed by either UTA or the Wasatch Front Regional Council. So that's another piece of this that's happening within that structure.
So who then runs the administration and makes those spending decisions?
So that will be the commission that will do that.
Mm. Okay. So as this commission, though, is it like we see with the Planning Commission, it's an appointed board, an advisory board, or do you know?
It will have its own thing, and it will concentrate on the mission of the Mountain Accord. So it is essentially becoming its own entity, but with limited role. I mean, it still will have the same limits that were contemplated under the original Mountain Accord. They're not going to be able to bind other local governments to certain things, which was one of the strong things that we were fighting for through the process.
All right. Let's see. Sustainability Manager Lisa Yoder will be presenting a new policy called Project Design Approach to Achieve High Performance Outcomes. Basically, it means that when you build or renovate county buildings, the county will do it by green standards. So we weren't doing that already?
Well, we were building as much quote-unquote green standard into our buildings as we could, but we didn't really have a clear objective in mind. Now that the county council has put into their climate action plan, they have clear goals within that. We want to have our facilities, as we develop them, redevelop them, really support that well. And so this is a little different approach. Instead of setting standards, which is kind of a moving target because the building standards change all the time based on different factors. We're looking at it more from an outcomes approach. So, you know, we have a goal of net zero energy, net zero water, net zero waste with our buildings. Now, is that easy to achieve and is it cheap to achieve? No, it's not. Those things are not. But we're gonna approach the way we contract our facilities, whether it's a remodel or a new build, and see what contractors bring to us, designers bring to us, and then we'll evaluate those based on those goals in order to see how much of that outcome we can make within a budget.
So if I'm a contractor and I get a contract to build a new county building or renovate an old one, what does that mean to me?
Well, what it will mean is that we're trying to have those folks tell us within a reasonable budget that we have budgeted for a project, what can we achieve? And then we'll evaluate those against each other to see what people bring to us. And so, you know, if we're looking at it, X contractor against Y contractor, if one is able to bring more of those outcomes that we want to achieve through our climate action plan, then in that line item, that's a positive for their competition on the bid.
Sure, I can do it with a smaller building.
But then it has
to meet the parameters, though, that RFP or the QFP or whatever.
Absolutely. It has to achieve the goals of what we're trying to do with a building and the services we're trying to provide. The other thing that Lisa is putting forward, or our sustainability project is putting forward, is really tightening down on making sure that we commission buildings properly, meaning that once a building is put in place and is operating, that we have our builders go back and make sure that all of the systems are working the way they're supposed to achieve the sustainability goals. That's often a step that gets cut out in value engineering because it can be expensive or it can seem expensive at the beginning of a project. But if you're trying to achieve certain things with your systems, you really need to do that. And then also we're contemplating perhaps putting a performance bond against that project with a contractor so that they achieve certain goals and they can be measured. And we make sure before we release that bond that the building achieves what it's supposed to.
So can this be expanded to all building in the unincorporated area?
I'm sure it could be, but we'd like to look at it with our county facilities first to see what that means. And then it could be looked at in the future in building standards. We haven't really talked about that in that respect yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, first thing you'd have to consider is the real estate lobby, and then also that you have to deal with some state building code administrator.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if it's allowed by law to do that. So,
But we
can do it by ourselves, and we can do it with our own public facilities, and we're going to do that. We're going to do something. I don't know I don't want to speak for the county council yet and what they're going to adopt.
Weatherization program, and this is something we had talked about last year. Does that still have any legs on it?
Well, the weatherization program is still active with Summit Community Power Works and the efforts that we're doing there to achieve the number one rating around the Georgetown Energy Prize. So still very active in that. Rocky Mountain Power is still encouraging weatherization through some of the programs that they have. So we're still seeing people do that within the community and achieving those goals that they have personally with their energy budgets.
North Summit Recreation District wants to put a property tax levy on the ballot to operate its district. The rate is listed as 000.176. Any idea how much that is per $100,000 of a home value?
All right. Well, I'm not going to be able to do $100,000 of value, but I can do the average taxable value in the North Summit Recreation District is about $146,000. And so if they went to the maximum rate, of course, all this ballot measure would do would be allow the district to put on a property tax. It doesn't set a property tax. They still have to go through truth in taxation for that. But for that average taxable value of $146,000, it would equal about $25.70 added to the property tax bill at the maximum level. And, of course, they don't have to go to the maximum level. But at that maximum level, that would raise approximately about $115,000 and some change.
Each year.
Each year. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, technically this is already on the ballot unless the council decides to withdraw that. They already made that decision earlier in the year. These are the required public hearings around that in order to comply with the law.
And any idea how that money would be used for? I guess we should bring in somebody from Northside Recreation.
I'd rather have them represent that. You know, they operate on a shoestring right now. They get about $35,000 a year from the county in a grant in order to do that. I think they'd like to be able to take matters into their own hands a little bit and not rely on the county grants. I mean, I'm sure they'll still apply for those, but they'd love to do that and enhance their programs. They do very, very good and basic recreation programs right now, and they'd like to expand into youth and adult programs a little bit more.
Now, this is certainly before your time, but there was a North Summit Recreation Facility shot down about 4 years ago. You think sentiments have changed in the North County?
I don't want to represent that because that's not my district. So,
okay. Any concern that residents could see as many as 3 property tax increases on their ballot for November? And I guess maybe I should ask, because we've got the transit and transportation. Is that one, or does that get separated?
Well, transportation taxes that are being contemplated are sales tax, so it's not a property tax. It's a little different.
Okay.
And then in the Park City area, if, you know, they're contemplating an open space general obligation bond, which would be property tax. So it's kind of, you know, the transportation taxes would be seen countywide. The North Summit Recreation property tax initiative would only be seen on the ballot in North Summit Recreation District, similar to the open space bond issue in Park City. If the city council chooses to do that, they'd only see it on the ballot in Park City. So it's a little difficult to say that, you know, everybody would see 3, but in some parts of the county, they might see 2 or 3 different tax initiatives. That's correct.
Yeah. Again, those would be separate, though, what the county's proposing for the sales tax, a separate transit and separate transportation
improvement? That is what is being discussed right now, and the county council is still waiting to make the decision. Probably they'll start their discussions on next week at their regular meeting.
And you could make that decision. Well, you would have to by the August 31st
meeting.
They do.
We have set our own deadline of August 31st because we don't want to have a special meeting. So the 31st is our deadline. Definitely they will have discussions on the 17th and the 24th so that we have a meeting in Colville and a meeting at the Richens Building on the west side of the county.
All right. As I mentioned, it is Fair Week.
It sure is.
Maybe you can just kind of give us an update of what's taking place.
Sure. So, you know, this last weekend was the Demolition Derby, sold out once again, and I think everybody had a great time there. Tonight, Barrels and Bronx is on and youth archery competition. Tomorrow night, the Little Buckaroo Rodeo starts, and that goes for 2 nights, so Wednesday and Thursday. Friday and Saturday will be the PRCA Rodeo and different music acts that we'll be playing. And then Saturday we'll start the day with the parade and end the day with fireworks. Having great attendance out at the fair. We're also running a shuttle from the Jeremy Ranch from Jupiter Bowl at Kimball Junction out to the fair. We had over 75 people ride the bus this weekend to get out to the fair. It will start and run all day Friday and Saturday. So if you're not wanting to drive out there or you don't know where it is, just jump on the bus at Jupiter Bowl and we'll get you out there and back.
It's free?
It's free.
And it runs how often? Any idea?
I should know that, but I don't know that. So I'm sure there's schedules up there. There's also schedules on the fair website.
And quick update in terms of the new fairgrounds property. We've got an option on that.
Well, we have closed on all the properties. So we now own the 12 acres that we've been renting for the past few years in order to house campers and things like that. And so we're still in the process of programming with a consultant to figure out what we're going to do. We've actually got their consultant out at the fair this weekend to review some of the concepts that we've put together so that people can see what we're contemplating and can ask questions and give their opinions and help decide what we'll do with that property in the future.
So there's some exhibit up there then?
And our consultants will be there to talk to folks that are at the fair.
Yeah, when does some kind of presentation come before the public?
We contemplate probably in the next 2 months we'll be out public. We want to get this wrapped up so that we can get it into the budget process for 2017. So we have to be out in front of the public end of August, beginning of September, in order to get some feedback from that perspective.
And the idea is that this time next year it would remain as same, or it would
well,
be
it all depends on what we decide to do and how we decide to phase it. Don't really know the answer to that one yet.
Okay. Tom, anything else you wanted to
just,
mention?
We're two volunteer opening recruitments right now, Summit County Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee. We have one vacancy, that closes on the application closes on August 17th, and also the Summit County Arts and Parks Advisory Committee for Recreation also closes on August 17th.
Okay. People can find out more on the website?
Absolutely.
Great. Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:33. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow night, Jim Santee Auditorium, the monthly review of the Treasure Project. In the studio with an update, Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the report in the packet, I should say, 5:30 p.m., Jim Santee Auditorium. One more time.
5:30 p.m., Jim Santee Auditorium tomorrow night. And then the site visit is coming up on the 14th of September, and we'll set the time for that after this meeting tomorrow night.
Okay. The report in the packet says that the Treasure topic, again, we're talking about the size and scale of the project, but you have presented some different numbers here. You list about 14 buildings. For each, you list the square footage, the accessory space, and the common space. So what's the purpose of that?
Okay. So Francisco Astorga, our senior planner, has gone exceptionally far into the analysis of this project, probably farther than anybody else has gone since 84 or 85, to really and truly understand the effect of unit equivalents and the actual sizes of the buildings. So you're seeing a very, very complex technical report. But I think the quick summary of all of that is we're going to ask the Planning Commission to make a determination whether the applicant has correctly applied what we call the 5% rule. And the 5% rule has two components. As the codes changed from 1985 through 2004 through till 2009, those two components are you're allowed to have 5% of the square footage of your building for support commercial and 5% for resort accessory commercial. And that code gets applied differently depending on what year the code was enacted and how much you apply that 5%. And so what the applicant has done is they've taken the total square footage of the building and applied the 5% rule to it. We're not convinced that's the right way to go. We're asking the Planning Commission to do it. So the crux of Francisco's work, besides the detail on all of these buildings that we'll talk about on the 14th, is this 5% rule. So we're going to start that discussion, and you'll see that discussion in this very complex packet that Francisco put together.
So how has he counted the 5%?
The 5% rule, the way the staff is looking at it, is it's applied to the basic unit equivalents of the project and not the project as a whole. So you just can't take the whole project, multiply by 5%, and say we get this much.
So when you use the unit equivalent, I mean, we've been using, right, about 415,000 square feet to 1.1 million square feet. Where does that bring
I think where we're at is the basic number from 1985 and the 2004 application is about 840,000 square feet, and now it's sitting at about 1 million square feet. So you can see that comparison in the staff report. Part of that volume is how the 5% rule was applied. Part of that volume is in the parking calculations, which may or may not have been in the 85 volume calculation.
So the largest structure, there's one for more than 250,000 square feet. That would be the hotel and conference center?
Yes, that's correct.
And then what about the tallest building in the proposal?
Oh, I'd have to look in the sheet to see which one the tallest building is. And that's Francisco's World.
All right.
But they are tall. I mean, they could – the potential exists the way the grading plan looks right now. The buildings are – the cut slope in some places is approaching 100 feet. So those buildings may be above grade by 35 feet, but they're also below grade by 40, 50, 60 feet as well that are exposed over the town. So I think overall the unit equivalent discussion is coming to a head. The 5% rule is a hard discussion, and the next discussion we're going to have is whether the 1985 approval contemplated this size of excavation in order to achieve the heights that are required.
So explain that to me a little bit more. So if we see a building 35 feet high, let's just look at the one outside here. That's probably 35 feet high, right?
Yep.
And so that's what we would see looking up on the hillside, or we would see that other 55, 65
feet? Yes, you would see all of that if you were at a level perspective with the plaza elevation, which is about where the midstation used to be at the town lift. So right where all the Sweeney ski runs combine and then you ski down to the town bridge, that's approximately base elevation of the two villages, the Creel Gulch site and the Mountainside site. So that's the bottom of it, and then you need to look up the hill. So in effect, those buildings are stepping up the hill to mask the cut slope behind them. And that's part of the volumetric calculation as well. Because of the way the project is designed, all the service trucks, including the big semis, all the fire trucks, all the emergency vehicles, all have to go underground. So instead of having a 7 or 8 foot parking garage like you'd see here in China Bridge, in some cases those floor-to-floor spaces could exceed 20 feet. So all of a sudden you're doubling the volume of the parking area and drive and circulation in an attempt to put it underground. Or at least underneath the building structure, not underground, excuse me.
Right. So that would just be parking underground, or where they would actually have some hotel? Who wants to be underground?
Well, the parking is under the buildings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The emergency services is under the buildings. Mm-hmm. All of the back of the house service areas where you're going to get the commissary and the food trucks and your laundry delivery and all those other things are going to all be underground. So it's not just pulling your F-150 pickup underground. You're going to be pulling a full-size semi underneath there. Or a fire service vehicle.
Right, like the delivery trucks that we see.
Exactly, right outside our window right now. We're looking at that.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of what the average number of stories is in the project?
I'm going to yield back to Francisco on that one as well. The buildings range from 3 to 6 stories overall, and then there's a couple of taller ones.
We've discussed how much density or square footage is vested in the original approval. Is there anything vested in the number of buildings or how tall they are? I mean, can city planners change those details?
The Planning Commission is going to do a review of what was approved in 85 in terms of volume and massing and how those buildings sat on the site. And they will be making a look at how the excavation sits from the 85 plan. And a couple of things are happening. If the building is oriented up and down the slope rather than horizontally with the contours, sometimes the mass of that building is reduced. If it's parallel with the contours, then you're looking at a long, low building. If it's perpendicular to the contours, then you're kind of looking at an apparent taller building. And so one of the things Francisco and his team have been looking at is the difference between the original plan and the current plan and what we call the Woodruff drawings analysis. And the original plans were done by a guy by the name of Delamar Woodruff. And so we're comparing the building orientations of the 85 plan with the application as it currently sits.
All right. In the report, it said that the amount of support commercial exceeds the amount that was allowed in the 1985 land management code by nearly 38,000 square feet. The applicant, I'm guessing, just disagrees with you and calculates the number differently. Is that, again, back to that 5% rule?
That's the 5% rule, and thank you very much for catching that. I know Francisco and his team have worked very hard on that, and there was a code change between 85 and the 2004 submittal, and the applicant's trying to take advantage of a portion of that code change. So that's the debate the Planning Commission is going to have. And all of that work that Francisco and the applicant put together are going to go to the Planning Commission. They're going to work their way through this 5% rule.
So the report says if the applicant did take advantage of the current code, that would require reopening the entire master plan?
That's certainly a possibility that the Planning Commission could determine.
So is that a subjective analysis, or is there actually some code in place that supports that? I guess my question is, I mean, is this a decision then that becomes appealable if, in fact, that ends up in the court?
Yes, it is. And here's how it works. There are two key components of the way the approval was written in 85. Compliance with the 85 master plan, 86 master plan, and the correct use of unit equivalents. So the Planning Commission has a direct obligation to determine whether the plan as currently proposed is complies with the plan as it was approved, and that includes unit equivalents, and it improves back of the house, building volumes, all of those things.
So your answer, yes, was that it is a subjective analysis, or yes?
Planning Commission has to determine whether they're in compliance, and that's part of their duty.
The support commercial, as staff sees it, does this commercial just service those who are staying at the project?
Well, that's another tricky question. I think you're seeing a lot of our hotels that have support commercial components to it. The original program would be to serve the folks that are staying at the hotel. However, a lot of the commercial uses are reaching out into the public in order to support the spas and their restaurants, particularly spas and restaurants and healthcare kind of things. Those are really reaching out to the public, and you're seeing the impact throughout town with parking demands during the day and additional traffic generation for these commercial uses that were only supposed to be primarily for the use of the guests.
So how does that makes it very tricky then for the Planning Commission, because I mean they could find a finding to not approve because they say the support commercial competes with Main Street when it's supposed to support the commercial.
They could say that the commercial was not primarily there to support the guests of the project and therefore require commercial unit equivalents. So they'd have to reallocate unit equivalents to add commercial space if it's trying to serve the general public, and the Planning Commission's going to walk that fine line and be very careful how we approve commercial in that location.
So the opponents of the project, such as the Think Group, they have presented an illustration of how that hill will look like with the project built out. I don't know if you've seen it. It's bright pink on green hills. Is that illustration accurate?
I've only seen it from afar. I haven't looked at it in detail. I think the applicant has also submitted a visual simulation. I think the public would be well served to look at the Think information and compare it to what the applicant has proposed, because ultimately it's going to have to comply with the Historic District Design Guidelines as well. And in this particular case, I don't think we're anywhere close to being in compliance.
Well, that was my next question. This is part of the Historic District.
It's outside of the district. However, the requirements from the 85-86 approval require compliance with the Historic District Guidelines.
So when I see this illustration of the pink buildings on the green hill, I mean, it's very institutional looking, you know, rectangle buildings, square
right,
buildings.
Right. So
it doesn't have to have the gabled roofs or, you know, the historic elements that we require.
I think it's probably going to come closer to what you're seeing on Historic Main Street with our historic buildings. Those are flat roof, boxy looking buildings. However, they have appropriate facades, appropriate rhythm and scale. Appropriate materials, all of those things. And remember that even the Marriott project down there by Town Lift was approved under the guidelines. So that's a newer project from the 70s and 80s that had to go through the design review process under that code.
All right. Four other items on the agenda. All of them call for a public hearing, but no recommendation until later this month or next. Anything that you wanted to highlight?
No. The project at 3776 Rising Star Lane is just a very minor swapping around of how the lot was originally platted. The house doesn't go any higher on the hill. There's no bigger impacts. It's about 10 or 12 square feet difference in the change, but we need to process it. The planning department is working very hard on changing land management code. Kirsten Westzone and her team have been accomplishing that. This one tonight is going to be fairly dry, or tomorrow night will be fairly dry. So if you're a code geek like me, it'll be a lot of fun. But if you want to watch the Olympics, I understand. I do want to let the public know we've received a couple of appeals of the conditional use permit for the retaining wall on Alice Claim. There's at least two appeals in my office right now that will be heard in the coming months. I think we have 45 days to hear those appeals. The appeal is on the conditional use permit. The city council has not heard the plat approvals yet, and therefore the issue is not ripe for appeal on the plats yet.
The appeals then on the CUP for the retaining walls, those came by from residents?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because they had, and the only way they could appeal was the fact that they had made a claim prior to and during a public meeting or something?
Right. So anybody has standing to appeal that's either commented in writing or in public at a meeting, you can appeal a decision of the Planning Commission to one of our boards. And it's the same thing with Historic Preservation Board. It's the same with my Historic District Design Review. It's the same as when I make a determination about whether a building's too high or something else is out of compliance. You always have that appeal right.
Okay. Anything else?
No, it's going to be fun, Leslie. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Again, the Park City Planning Commission meeting 5:30 tomorrow in a special location at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Number one item on the agenda is the Treasure Project. 8:49 now. Good morning. Well, it's the PC Mark is offering the free lunchtime learning program. That's happening tomorrow from noon to 1 p.m. in the PC Mark party room in the studio. To tell us more about that, Dondi Sherlikes. Good morning to you, Dondi. Let's get you on the right mic here. So we're going to be talking about backyard beekeeping.
Yeah, so I'm here to invite the community tomorrow to our free lunchtime learning from 12 to 1 at the Mark. And unfortunately, Doug Fryer, who is our beekeeper, is a Summit County fireman and got called out, unfortunately, for us. So tomorrow's topic is bees, pollinators, and how to keep them around. And he's going to be talking about supporting native pollinators, honeybees, and saving water by xeriscaping with native plants, plus keeping honeybees as a hobby and how they work into food production.
All right, so this is something he does on the side.
Yeah, so Doug has been a gardener and hobbyist beekeeper for 8 years. He's also worked for Summit Community Gardens and Park City Community Education, teaching about beekeeping, native pollinators, and encouraging sustainable local ecosystems.
Okay. So, again, this is happening noon to 1 o'clock. People are free to bring their lunch, learn a little bit more about beekeeping. I wonder if he'll have any honey.
I know, right? It would be awesome if he did bring some honey. Maybe I'll text him that.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it. So thank you, Leslie, and I look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow.
Okay. And again, this is happening noon to 1. If you can't make that, Doug will also be at the Summit Community Gardens on Friday night, 5 to 7 p.m. Everyone's welcome to bring their favorite beverage there, hang out with the bees, socialize and network. The event is free. They are asking for a small donation to help support the Beehive program. Again, an opportunity to learn more about backyard beekeeping.